Hi guys, it's just Kelsey here, all of my lonesome for this little bonus episode. If you listened to last week's episode, Mic Check, then you would have heard Serene Omran. She was kind of the main focus of that piece. She's a Muslim music producer and she's kind of using TikTok to bypass the gatekeepers of the music industry. But our interview was so, so interesting and I just could not share it. So here it is, and I hope that you enjoy. Okay, I'm just gonna say hey, hi.
Hi.
Hi, Serene. Can you tell me your name, what you do, all that type of thing?
Yeah, sweet. So my name is Serene Omran, and I guess I'm a music producer. I do TikToks for fun. I also study film. I just did my first film, directed it, scoring that. So yeah, that's pretty much me.
Yeah. I love how you said I'm kind of a music producer. I think you've passed that threshold now.
I don't know yet. I don't know if we're there, but right. I'm not trying to be humble. I'm just like really just.
Yeah. So can you tell me a little bit about your childhood, what it was like, all that type of thing?
So I actually grew up in Jordan.
Jordan?
Yeah. Right. So that's in like the Middle East.
Right.
Near Palestine.
Mm-hmm.
So Lebanon, Syria, like that's the surrounding countries. Grew up there for 9 years.
Wow.
Went to school there. Actually went to American schools.
Right.
Which is why people keep commenting on my accent, but I don't think it's there anymore.
Now that you've said that, I kind of hear it now.
Yeah, no, you don't. No, I don't know. I guess it's because I've been here 8 years now, so it's just fading away. But yeah, so it was around a lot of Arab people, a big Muslim community, mostly Muslim people. I would say it's very conservative as well.
Mm.
Not much options growing up. Like, I never had that, like, I want to be a musician thing until I came to Australia because I knew I had, like, a chance. But I guess growing up in like Middle Eastern countries, you're like, oh, I'm gonna be an engineer, or I'm gonna be a doctor, but that's the stereotype, which I didn't want to like stick by. So yeah, that's how I grew up.
Yeah. And why did you guys come to Australia?
So my parents actually migrated in like 1992.
Right.
So my brother was born here and my siblings were here before me, but then they left again. Went back to Jordan. And then after that, we just kind of like, we're like, okay, well, we need better opportunities and we know that we can find that here. Not saying that Jordan doesn't have opportunities, because it does. Like, they have really good unis and schools and all that stuff. Like, I had good opportunities, not like most people as well.
Yeah.
But yeah, I guess we just saw a different future for ourselves. Yeah.
So what's your first memory of music? When did you pick up a guitar?
Okay. So way before I picked up a guitar.
Yeah. Tell me.
I had this like, you know, these like laptops, but it's not a laptop, but you put a CD in it and like you watch movies.
Right? I know what you're
really
talking
old,
about.
But like basically I used to get that and then put like a movie in there or something, and then I would have some headphones and just pretend that I was mixing music, which is so random. I was like 8.
That is like the cutest thing I think I've ever heard.
Yeah, it was just like me constantly pretending like I'm doing something with music. But then I remember I was 9. Me and my brother, so we have Eid, right? Where you get money from people.
Right, okay.
So me and him were like, listen, how about we split, you know, like money and just go buy a guitar? So my brother's actually a singer as well.
Right. Yeah, okay. So I actually think I've heard him on one of your TikToks.
Yeah,
he's really great.
He's on a few of my remixes. So I remember we went downtown to the most like underdog place in Jordan. A lot of culture, not gonna lie, but yeah, basically we bought like a guitar for like $30.
Right.
And it was like a black classic guitar.
Yeah.
And I remember I never picked it up until my brother started to play. But he learned this like, you know, the Titanic song?
Yes.
Right?
All too well.
Yeah. He learned it on like one string and it was by ear. Like he didn't learn, he didn't do anything. He just learned like the tune on one string. So I was like, easy, I can do that. And I picked it up and I started playing on one string. Like for a whole year, I was just playing on one string. Like literally never.
This one string, I will cherish it forever.
Yeah, I think I broke it at some point, right. But after that 1 year, I think we moved. And then when I really came to Australia, I started like looking up YouTube videos and like how to play chords. And even my first, which is so funny, but my first class in Australia at high school was music, which is like, oh, and they're like, oh, who can play guitar? And I'm like, me.
I can play one string of the guitar.
I actually knew how to play chords. Okay. This one. But yeah, it was really fun. And that's pretty much my musical journey as a kid.
Yeah.
But I don't think it started until recently, like for real.
Yeah. So are you all self-taught?
Yes.
Wow. Have you ever had any lessons?
Oh, okay. So in Jordan again. So after I came to Australia, I went back for, let's say, 3 months because my sister's getting married. Hey, sister, if you're listening to this, congratulations. It's been 10 years. But basically, when I went back, I also had Eid money. For some reason, I kept spending my Eid money on music, which is
I think typical. There's a good reason why.
Yeah, typical. But I remember I took like 3 lessons, super expensive. Oh, goodness. Mm. And I learned nothing.
Yeah, okay. So you kind of said that, you know, only until recently you've really started to get into music. Tell me about that.
Yeah, so I think a big kickstart was HSC.
Mm.
I did music, which was like 4 performances, and I like literally destroyed my hands practicing. But it was all for good reasons because I ended up getting like really good because I was really passionate about it. But at some point during HSC, I was like, after year 12, man, I'm going to stop music. Like, no way. Like, I'm not finishing. This is too hard. Like, it's becoming more of a chore, less of a passion, blah, blah, blah. Like, all that stuff that I feel like a lot of musicians go through at some point. So I think after I finished, I kept getting gigs after, like, I graduated. I was, like, playing at, like, concerts and stuff, which I was like, wait, like, this is kind of fun. But up to this point, I hadn't even started music producing or anything like that, producing music. But I don't know what it was. I think I bought my first laptop, well, my mom bought it for me, and I was like, okay, wait, I want to try something. And, like, I just I bought this Logic application, Logic Pro X, and I was like, okay, I'm gonna try this out because I was using GarageBand beforehand, so I kind of got the gist of it. And I just like started slowly doing beats. I'm not gonna lie, it sounded like shit at the beginning, but you know, that's why I never released anything till this year because I feel like the past 3 years or 4 years have just been me practicing. Mm. For like something.
Honestly, I thought that you must have been doing this your whole life. I'm quite actually gobsmacked.
Yeah,
that
no.
It's only been what, like 3 years until you've actually like really started picking
up. Yeah, I think also like going to uni, like there was a lot of resources that I could use, like for example the studios and stuff like that. I knew that it was my place and I really loved it. Which kind of I regretted it later that I didn't study music or like study music production. But don't get me wrong, I still love film. But yeah, I guess, yeah, from there, I just started like slowly building beats, learning how to like, you know, put a 4-bar loop and shit like that. So, it was really fun. And then TikTok just started, we'll get to that later.
Did you ever think that pursuing a career in the creative industries was a viable option for you? Did you ever think?
No. So, okay. Growing up as a Muslim Arab, you don't ever, like, for example, I know for a fact my parents didn't see that for me or my brother, let's say, because it was like, wait, so music doesn't really like make money or like it's so hard for musicians to make it. Like, that's facts, you know, like you have to be so different in order for someone to listen to your music. But I guess I just always knew, like, I don't know, dude, like this is gonna sound so cheesy, but deep down, ever since I was in high school, I just knew that I wanted to make it big. And I knew that I wanted to do something because I was like, well, first of all, I wear a hijab. Second of all, I'm Arab and I live in a Western country. I feel like people need some sort of representation like that, especially since I haven't seen one myself. And it was something I knew I wanted to do when I realized how important it would affect people. Like, of course I have haters, bro. Haters come from my own community. Like,
really?
Yeah, like the haters are people that saying that, you know, because music is like looked down upon, I guess, in like Islam or whatever. But like this, it's just a very controversial topic that people can't pinpoint. Which is why you get that hate, like, dude, why are you doing this? You're going to hell. I've never seen a woman do this before, specifically a Muslim woman. So it's like, but why? Yeah. Like, what makes me so different than, like, other women that have their hair out and, like, do the same thing? But to be honest, look, women in general, like, and not even just Muslim women, but I feel like women in the music industry, especially, like, music producers, aren't that noticed as, like, males, male producers, and it's because it's a male-dominated field.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Only 5% of producers worldwide are female. Well, that's in the whole world. 5%.
5%.
Yeah.
Damn. And I'm like, one of the 5%.
You will. Absolutely.
Well, I wonder what the freaking Muslim woman percentage is. I bet it's like 0.01, and that's me.
There aren't. I am the 0.01.
No, I honestly doubt that. I feel like there's a lot of Muslim women producers out there that just haven't been discovered yet. And I can't wait to discover them, because I just, every time I see someone who's a Muslim and they do music, I'm like, dude, like, let's do something together, because I just want to, like, have that platform with people that I know need it.
Well, I think that's something that's come up a lot in the research as well, is that it's not even that there aren't women in the industry, it's that they're not getting paid for the work that they're doing. So they're not technically classified as employed in that sector, which is really baffling, because 50% of people in tertiary education doing music are women. Well, 46 or something percent. But nearly half of people doing music as a tertiary education are women. So, it's a bit...
You know what's the other sad thing is? I remember... Someone told me, like, dude, if you want to study music, you're gonna end up being a music teacher. Like, you're not gonna, like, you're not gonna go play concerts. You're not gonna, like, tour the world. Like, I used to hear that shit all the time, but I think that is a big push to, like, be something more, because I feel like once someone wants to put me in a box, I'm like, no, like, no, dude, you can't do that. Like, I'm so much more. Like, but yeah, that's interesting that you say that. Yeah. For sure.
So take me back to the first TikTok you ever made. I know what one it is. It was when you were looking at the camera and playing, like, not looking at your hands. Do you remember that?
Yeah, but, like, I don't even consider that my first TikTok. Look, that one was at uni. I actually filmed that at uni. It was in the lounge on the underground.
Okay.
But let's talk about the one that actually blew up.
Yeah, well, that was my next one. So tell me about, what was the idea behind that TikTok? First of all, explain to me what the TikTok is, what it was.
Honestly, I would just do it for fun. Like, with my friends from work, we'd be like, oh, let's do this TikTok challenge. Like, it was nothing serious. I never expected to, like, do music on it. I knew, like, I had a friend of mine that, she was, like, doing TikTok, and she, like, had a lot of followers, and I was like, and she kept just saying, like, Zareen, why don't you, like, use your music and use this platform to, like, put your music out? I'm like, bro, what would I even do? Like, I do my original stuff, and, like, no one wants to hear that yet, unless, you know, you need some sort of platform. And she was like, just try. And I don't know when it was. I think it was during quarantine for sure. It was, like, the beginning of lockdown. No one was leaving the house. And my sister sent me a text of this music producer on TikTok. His name is Illusion. And he would do remixes of, like popular trending songs on TikTok. And I was like, yo, that's insane. I can do that. And, you know, context, before that, I've never actually remixed a song. It was the first time I was, having a crack on it. Yeah. I didn't even know how to isolate vocals. I didn't know how to, like, build. Like, I just had no idea what I was doing. It was just kind of, like, experimental. So it was, like, 12 a.m. This motivation just comes out of nowhere. I don't know if you guys, like, understand what that is, but literally 12 a.m., ready to go to bed. I'm in my PJs. I get up and I just sit on my desk, and I was like, okay, what's the most popular song on TikTok right now? Say So. I've been hearing that shit everywhere. Like, it's crazy. Yeah.
Doja Cat?
And it was like, yeah, Doja Cat. And it was, like, 20 million, like, people use the sound. And I was like, okay, this is definitely the song. Basically, I just sat there and I started doing it, and I didn't even know where I was going. Like, I didn't even know that much about, like, mixing and stuff at this point. But I did it, and I was like, okay, I'm just gonna record a video of, like it was, like, one take. Like, I didn't, like, stop or delete something. Like, I was just like, no one's gonna watch this. I'm just gonna put it. And I swear, I posted it that night around, like, 2 a.m., went to bed, woke up the next day, my phone is blowing up. And it was unreal. Like, I was like, oh, it's at 10,000 views by, like, in the morning. And I was like, okay, that's enough. Like, it's not going to go more than that. And then I remember getting texts from like my friends, and they're like, what the hell, dude? You're like doing something right now. And I was like, okay, this is weird. I don't like the attention. Please stop.
Please stop.
But at the same time, I'm like, give me more. Yeah. And then my sisters were like, Serene, look, you're doing like, they kept like refreshing the views. And I was like, I hate that. Like, cause that now there's pressure. Yeah. Like, you know, and, but at the same time, it just felt so good. Cause I was like, dude, this is insane. Like, but I needed to humble myself. I'm so much about that. It's like, don't get carried away, but like comments and views and all that shit. Cause that it's scary. Like, it's a scary place. So yeah, I just remember like, by the next day it had like reached 1 million. I went to work, everyone was freaking out. And then the day after that, it was like 2 million. And then my sister was like, dude, you need to like upload something tomorrow. Like, you have to keep going or people are going to forget about you. Mm. And I was like, yeah, fair. And I think after that video, I had reached like 20,000 followers by the, like the next day. And I had like literally 50. 50 went to 20K, yeah. By the way. Yeah, so I then started posting more. Like, then the Harry Styles one came. It was just like, it kept going. I would post one every single day until, like, I'm still not satisfied. Like, I still want to put out more stuff, but you can't force yourself to do that. You kind of just have to trust the process and like, okay, I'm feeling it today. Because if you're not feeling it, you're not going to produce something good. But I'll tell you this, like, making remixes really improved my like technical skills with music producing and stuff. Like, I feel like I have a better ear now as well, because that stuff takes practice for sure. Yeah. But I'm so grateful that people like are listening to it and liking it. And even my friends are so damn supportive.
Yeah. Well, that video now has like 2.5 million plays on it and what, over 600,000 likes now?
I think so.
Crazy. And you've just released a song on Spotify as well.
Yeah, so I released, not just, but like, yeah, I released it in like June.
Right.
It was kind of, for me, the song that I released wasn't something that I wanted to like advertise or, you know, but I wanted to put something out there just to see what's going to happen. Yeah, so I wouldn't say that this is my best track or like it's the song that like, you know, is going to hit, because it really wasn't. It was just a instrumental of like a lo-fi beat that I did. But I actually like got... I got in contact with people from like Spotify, like people that were reaching out to me, which was crazy. And this guy that works with Spotify, he's so nice. Like, he put my song in a playlist, and from there it was like hitting a lot of streams. Last time I checked, it was like around 100,000 streams. Wow. And I was like, okay, that's pretty crazy, because it's just an instrumental. Like, you know what I mean? Like, not shitting on people that do instrumentals, because trust me, I do that too. But like, I'm just saying, like, if that made that much like streams, I can't wait to put out stuff that I'm actually proud of, and like, I think that would reach people and like connect with people.
Do you think that, I mean, I know it's not the best piece that you've ever done, but do you think it would have, I mean, it's quite successful for your first Spotify release. Do you think that would have happened if you didn't do that Doja Cat remix?
Yeah, it definitely would not have happened. I think if I didn't do TikTok at all, I would be sitting at like less than 1,000. You know how like Spotify has this like less than 1,000 streams? Yeah, that would be me. But like, that's okay. I think I still respect people that know they don't have a big audience but still release their music, because in hopes that one day they know that they'll reach some kind of audience, you know? You don't have to be freaking like someone with 2 million freaking followers to be successful, because even just a small audience that you know is listening to your stuff and supporting your stuff, that can be better than like a crazy fame.
Well, one of the scholars that I was talking to when we were talking about what makes an artist successful, she said that there is this idea that you only really need 1,000 true fans, 1,000 people that are willing to dedicate time and money to your music. And that's really all it takes. But those fans have to be authentic and they have to be loyal and follow you across different platforms. What do you think about that?
That's really accurate. I'll tell you this. You know how like you can link your Instagram to your TikTok?
Mm.
And like, people follow you on TikTok all the time. Like they can literally, if you're on the FYP, there's like a plus sign that you can automatically follow that person. But how TikTok works is that you can be posting videos every day, but they might not ever hit because of, I don't know. We'll get into that later for sure. But yeah, like people just follow, but then they probably will never come back to your page.
Mm, yeah.
But the people that actually care will go and follow you on Instagram because, and that's what I've noticed. Like, yeah, okay, people are like, oh, you have 110,000 followers on TikTok, which is, yes, I'm so thankful for. It's insane. But the people that actually want to listen to my stuff and actually support me are on Instagram. And they're like, what, 4,000 people? But that's still a lot to me. Like, that's 4,000 people, bro. Put 4,000 people in a room. Like,
try.
But, like, it's still insane. So, yeah, I definitely agree with that theory. And, look, at the end of the day, I'm not chasing after people. Like, I'm not dying for people to, like, be like, oh, please support me, please support me. Like, that should come from you. And at the end of the day, if you listen to me or not, like, I am still happy that I'm making music. Because that's, like, to me, it's my comfort zone.
So your TikTok bio reads, "That hijabi that remixes songs." Can you tell me why that's at the forefront of your page?
Because that's what I am. I mean, like, look, I'm all about breaking the stereotypes, and I'm all about, like, okay, I know I'm a Muslim, but look past that. Like, of course, but, like, come on, people cannot help and see just me in the scarf. Like, that's okay. Like, I don't expect more, but I don't. The thing that I don't like is for someone to come and judge me straight up, because that's when I'll be like, okay, stop right there. You can, it's okay for you to, when you first see me, you're like, oh, she's a Muslim girl, right? That's obviously, like, the truth. Mm-hmm. But once you, like, get to know me, I feel like in the past, a lot of times that I've been rejected is simply because I am, like, straight up front Muslim. Because people just doubted that.
Do you think that's a result of the hyper visibility that comes with wearing a hijab? So people are more likely to make a snap judgment just based off that one piece of clothing you're wearing.
Yeah, look, like, this is, it's good that you bring that up, because obviously, okay, let me just put it into like a few words, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe not a few words, yeah, maybe a couple words. More. But when I decided to wear the hijab, it wasn't for people. It was simply because I love my religion and I want to do this for my religion. It's not something like, oh, you know what? People are going to like me better, or people are going to like me less with the hijab on. I don't give a shit. Dude, like, that's my choice. My body, my, like, whatever, you know? Like, all you have to do is literally just respect someone for that. Like, you can't really be going out saying, yo, she's Muslim. Like, she... Because this is this stereotype that, like, Muslim girls or women, like, they should just stay at home, get married, you know, like, that shit just pisses me off. Because once a Muslim woman actually wants to, like, be successful, she's brought down, like, all the way to the ground, man. Mm. Like, because people just don't think that there's potential for that. But that's the thing that makes me more motivated, is because, like, man, I wanna prove those people wrong in so many ways that, like, it's okay to do this. It's okay to be driven by a career. It's okay not wanting to settle down so early on in life. And it's okay not wanting to, like, get married tomorrow and have kids. Like, you can have a successful career, and at the same time, later, if you find the person, the right person, you can get married to them. But, like, that shouldn't stop you from reaching your true potential, is what I'm trying to say.
Have you experienced any type of negativity online?
So, look, I don't personally like focusing on the negatives, but not to say that they're not there. Mm. I think that there's definitely more love than hate. Mm. Like, that's something that I'm so shocked by, because I didn't really expect it. I truly thought that I was going to have a bunch of people saying, yo, you're Muslim, you're going to hell, dude. Why are you doing this? But it's not that. Some people were like, dude, we're so happy that you're out there doing that, because I feel like people need to see it. And some people are saying that, you know, even people that, it's like, you don't know if you should take it as a negative or like a love comment, but they're like, oh, wow, this is so weird. I've never seen a Muslim hijabi girl produce music. And it's like, I know that that's kind of negative, but, like, I'll just take it as a positive thing. Yeah. Because it's true, they probably haven't.
Yeah.
You know, that's the whole point.
Yeah.
That's the whole point.
So when you thought that TikTok was going to be banned, what was your first reaction?
Okay, so a lot of things went through my mind at the time. Like, I wasn't super attached to TikTok to the point where I was like, oh my God, my career is going to be over. Like, I don't think like that, because I think that there's definitely so many opportunities out there just waiting to happen. I just manifested. Obviously I was scared, and like, I was like, okay, that's it. Like, it's over. If TikTok is gone, because TikTok was a big platform to so many minorities. Like, it was like, it wasn't just, you saw everybody on TikTok, every color, every ethnicity, every religion. And that's what was so like refreshing about it. Which is why I felt so accepted on TikTok in like comparison to Instagram. Instagram, I remember one time people post, like, this Arab Muslim page posted my TikTok video from TikTok, and I read the comments and it was disgusting. And I was like, this is why I don't like Instagram. This is why, like, because, again, I'm not trying to shit on the Arab Muslim community, because that's literally my community. I love you guys. Like, don't get me wrong. There's some of you that are really, like, trying to help me by, you know, guiding me to the right path and stuff, which I respect that. But also, I would like for people to just, like, get to know me than just, like, judge me from, like, my TikTok, like, videos. Because I post nothing private on TikTok. Like, it's just my art. Like, literally, I do not ever take that step to, like, show you my family or my life. And I don't like that. I respect people for doing it. It's just not me. So I guess I was totally upset, but I knew that there was going to be something better maybe out there, possibly.
So obviously when you go to your page, there's a lot of Western remixes, but there's also a ton of Arabic remixes as well. Do you think that's kind of like an expression of your own identity?
Look, when you come to a Western country, and this is like me, as like I'm talking as like an immigrant, right? You come to a Western country and suddenly you have to alter a lot of the stuff that you believe in, and they have to like open your mind to the culture here, because it is very, very different than like the Arab culture. And that's like fine, because that's when intersectionality comes in, because like you can't just be one or the other. You have to be both, depending on the people that you're around. And that's like something that can be hard, because it messes with your identity for sure. But at the end of the day, man, I'm an Arab. Like, someone asks me, where are you from? I want to say Australia, because I know that they're looking for another answer. But I don't say Australia, and I say I'm Palestinian, because I am. And like, I want that to be known. I feel like a lot of Palestinian people really want to like make sure that people understand that Palestine still exists, and they're Palestinian people that still exist. And I guess I'm one of those people that really just want to make that known. And I've realized through like my platform that people really want to see Palestinian people succeed. Yeah, like, and look, there's this whole ideology that Arab and Jews don't get along, but man, it's not Jews that we have a problem with, it's Zionism. So I just want to make that known, because I feel that people just misunderstand it a lot. So yeah, like, my music taste is Arab music. Mm. When I'm in the car, I'm listening to Arab music. Mm. If I'm at parties, it's probably my Arab playlist. So, but the thing is, because I find Arabic music so like hard to understand in terms of like music technology and like theory. Like, it's just, it has so many levels. I feel like the difference between Western and Eastern songs is Western songs are always using like the same four chords, C, F, you know, G, whatever. But man, Arabic songs are using like different keys and key changes. And yeah, so I guess I'm just interested in that. And I feel like through my rediscovery of Arabic music, it's just made me a better musician. So I wanted to intertwine the both, because I feel like there's really nice element to like mixing both cultures in music, which a lot of people enjoy. Know, because that means that a lot of people are dealing with intersexuality,
yeah,
in terms of like culture. And that's why they like hearing it. And like, bro, I got a Benny song and made it into an Arabic like dance.
Yeah, it was great.
It's weird.
I want to talk to you about Towelhead now.
Yes, sir.
The debut short film, mm-hmm. Towelhead. Now, just give me the log line, give me the synopsis.
Okay, so Towelhead, it's a short film about a Palestinian Muslim girl living in Western Sydney, Australia. It deals with a lot of like inner struggle and self-discovery, at the same time dealing with like discrimination in the Western world and how people view you. Like, you might have an idea of yourself that you're like so sure of, but someone might come along and just break it down for you. Which is something that, look, Towelhead isn't me. Like, the character isn't me. A lot of people might think that it is, but it's the people around me. Like, Towelhead, or like the character Layla, because Towelhead is about a character. Her name is Layla Gharib. It's just, I've seen a lot of musicians around me, and I just kind of combined all of those experiences into one. Mm. So, yeah, like, she's a musician, just trying to get this shot at an audition. But gets turned away because she's wearing a hijab, which is very realistic, by the way. Like, you wouldn't even, expect it, but it does happen. But, like, I wouldn't say that this is what the film is about. It's more about her and, like, her insecurities and doubts about herself, thinking if she's good enough, if she's not, which is why she's battling with, like, this personified version of herself. But yeah, that's pretty much what it is.
So can you tell me about that improv scene? Because I know that it was a hard one to shoot.
The audition scene we have, which is like when she goes to audition, she does the song, she performs it and everything, and she's so proud of herself. But then she gets turned away. They tell her, obviously, oh, if you want to make it through, you got to take off the hijab. Spoiler alert. but basically, I didn't quite get the reaction that I wanted. Mm. Although Safia, her name is Safia, the lead
amazing
cast,
actress.
Yeah, she is so insane.
She's so
she
good.
Made us cry like 1,000 times on set. But I think, anyways, back to the improv situation. I went up to Safia and I said, hey, how would you feel if I just got the judges to say a bunch of nasty shit to you? And she was like, honestly, dude, that would help so much. And I was like, okay. Now, this is a very hard situation. Just keep that in mind. I went up to the judges who come from like a white
Western background.
And I just expected them to say some racist shit. Mm. And that wasn't fair. Mm. And I didn't know how to quite tackle it. Like, this was my first time directing, or like having a directive role. So when I told them that, they were like, okay, well, can we like speak to Safia about it? And I was like, yeah, let's speak. Like, you guys go speak. And I was, like, out of the conversation. Yeah. I was like, you guys just, see what you're comfortable with. Safia eventually told them what to say, which is good, because then it didn't come from them and didn't have to, like, So, yeah, and then when they did the scene,
it
became so real because of the stuff that they were saying, which is acting, by the way. Like, it's all acting, but it just felt so real.
Yeah.
It felt like it was being said to me. Mm. And especially there was like, look, I shouldn't mention what the dialogue was because I feel like that's...
You'll have to watch the movie.
Yeah. But at the end, it was like, do you guys want to go for a second take? And I was like, I was completely destroyed. I was like, no. I was like, let's just keep it at that. Like, dude, I could not like go for a second round.
Yeah.
And Safia was just like in tears. Mm. And she came up to me and she was like, I'm so sorry, dude. I just kept thinking about you. Like, when they were saying that, I kept thinking about you. And then we just hugged it out. And it was like super emotional. And then everyone went on a break.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was intense. But I will never, ever forget that moment, because I felt like it has changed a lot of things for me and ways that I view stuff as well. It's just a big learning experience, I guess.
And what was directing like as a whole?
Before actually going on set, it was very nerve-wracking. Mm. I didn't, like, I was so prepared. I had everything. Like, I had a whole binder. Like,
I saw the binder.
Yeah, come on. It's a binder, dude. So I would say, like, I was super excited, but at the same time, it was so stressful because I felt like there was so much responsibility. of like needing to make this film something good, like something that's like representing right. Because when you have that, I guess, weight on your shoulder, you just want to make sure that you don't mess it up. Because it's no joke when you write about like a Muslim character or like a Muslim woman character, because there's not much of it. And people are sick of seeing the same stuff of like, you know, the only way that she feels liberated is by taking off the hijab, which is like most movies about Muslim women. I don't know. I'll mention a few actually later, but... So I just needed to make a point that, dude, the hijab is not the issue. It is not the issue. Society is the issue. And also, battling with yourself is an issue, but it's never about religion. It's just about being a person, being a human being.
As a white woman, I will never have to think about if what I'm wearing is going to affect a possible job prospect. And I think that is such a privilege, and I can't imagine the frustration and weight that must put on you.
Like, okay, I never, when I first put on the hijab, I guess the first thing I asked my music teacher, it was like, do you think that people will still like me if I like perform like with a guitar and had this like hijab on? And I remember she cried because she was like, why wouldn't they? Like, it's gonna be so different and people need to see it. But so I guess like I never ever once doubted me being a hijabi to be an issue. Obviously it is to some people, but to me it ain't.
Do you think that's because of a lack of education or systemic Islamophobia?
It's both in some way. Yeah. I feel like it's definitely media, because come on, media is constantly misrepresenting Muslims to be like terrorists and like oppressive people, or just all that stuff. Like I remember there's a few, like for example, when the Christchurch thing happened, which was very upsetting. It's like 59 mm-hmm. Muslim people dying in a massacre. But they never even called the killer a terrorist.
Yeah.
It was never mentioned once until like people started really like crying over it, and like, no, you better call him a terrorist or we're gonna fight. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But even when like there was something that came up recently about like the what's it called? The guy, I don't even know his name, but I don't even want to mention his name.
No.
He had a court date, and basically the victims' parents and families were like talking to him, and even in media articles, they still didn't say he was a terrorist. Like, I don't know how to say this. Don't get me wrong, but like, because once someone is a Muslim and, you know, does a massacre or like goes and kills off a bunch of people, because he's Muslim, he's called a terrorist, right? Mm. But this guy that went and killed a bunch of Muslims in a mosque, he was a Christian. But why is that like not like something to focus on? Like, I don't get it, right?
It's like religion plays no part in the white man's massacres, but it plays a huge part
in like a ethnic person who just committed a crime. Which, by the way, we don't like claim that person.
No,
that person isn't anything to represent Islam. Like, Islam literally says, "Do not kill people." Why would someone go off and kill someone and say it's in the name of Islam? That's just dumb.
Yeah. Throughout this research, and I think I've always known this, but I didn't have the words to explain it. And what I realize now is that the way that we organize society is through a cultural hierarchy, right? Mm-hmm. And what's at the top of that hierarchy? Whiteness. Eurocentric, Anglo-Saxon, Anglo-Celtic, right? Mm-hmm. That's at the top of the hierarchy. And the way that we reinforce that hierarchy is through media representation, pop culture, and then that trickles down into institutions, right? Mm-hmm. So when you see stuff all the time, because I work in the media, probably going to be working in a news outlet. You see those stories of, oh my God, a Muslim girl, she's playing football, she's liberated. But what they're actually saying is, look how much this Muslim woman is like us. Look how much whiteness this Muslim woman has.
That's
what they're doing. It's like the only way that white people can empathize or understand other cultures is through the likeness of whiteness as a white person as well. I've always thought of myself as progressive. Always, I think a lot of white people think of themselves, especially young white people. They're like, yeah, I'm progressive. I listen to Arabic publications. I, you know, have Muslim friends. I have black friends. I'm so, like, I'm so great. It's not enough. It's not enough to just pass the mic over.
Right.
You know, it's not enough to just pass the mic over. We have to start using the social currency afforded to us by our skin color to actively break down that hierarchy in the first place.
Everything you just said was pretty much like, I have a lot of white friends. Does that make me progressive?
Are you a progressive Muslim?
Yeah, am I a progressive Muslim? And that's the thing, like just because you see a Muslim woman playing soccer, suddenly you like her. Like, dude, soccer is like a big sport in Arab countries. So, like, sit down. Come on. Like, you know what I mean? We play sports in the streets. But that's the thing. It's like once they see something that they can relate to, they're like, oh, okay, maybe she's a cool Muslim girl. Maybe she's not that, like, one of those people that, like, are so, you know, conservative and closed off. Because there are some people like that. But, dude, just respect those people. You know, I ask myself this question a lot. Like, who the hell made, like, white superiority a thing? Like, where did that exist? Because, like, I don't know, dude, as far as I know, like, Europeans didn't come, like, till later, like, till after Arabs even, like, existed, right? Because, like, I studied, like, the history of religion and stuff. Like, it's really interesting when you look at it.
So I read a book recently by Mahal Krayem. It's called Heroes, Villains, and the Muslim Exception. And in it, she wrote that Muslims have a long history in Australia, dating back to the 1600s when the Massacres of Indonesia traded with the indigenous populations of Australia in what has been described as one of the most successful encounters between two cultures on this continent. So this idea that, I guess, Arabic and Muslim people are new immigrants is kind of factually incorrect, if you get what I'm saying.
The thing is, I think about that, like, in terms of, like, Australian history.
It's not talked about. It's never talked about.
Yeah, like, I feel like a lot of Australians are really ignorant about it sometimes and don't recognize that you guys are on a country that never even belonged to us in the first place. Like, this is Indigenous land. We'll always be Indigenous land, right? And that's why I kind of have a connection with, like, look, our struggles, like, let's say Palestinians and Indigenous people, right? Our struggles obviously are not the same, but I know how it feels like to have people, like, just a whole like race come and take over your land. Like, that's something that I do relate to a lot on so many different levels. Like, it's, you know, once you know that your community has faced genocide, then that's when you're like, okay, enough is enough. Like, everything that happens in terms of racism, discrimination, you have to stand against it. Just because you're Muslim or Arab doesn't mean that you shouldn't stand with the black people, dude. You both probably faced genocide. Like, you've literally faced genocide on different circumstances, yes, but that means that you still have to support each other no matter what. You know, because we know who the enemy is, right? It's white superiority and white supremacy, and we're trying to fight against that. Like, man, like, there was this, you know, like, it's still happening right now, but the Black Lives Matter movement, and it was 2 months ago or like a month ago where I had just been like on social media constantly watching every news article, reading videos, and I was destroyed. Like, I was completely, like, in the worst mental state ever because I couldn't wrap my head around about the brutality that happens, dude. And, like, people don't want to speak about it because it doesn't affect them. But if you're a human being, then it would affect you, you know? It's such a sensitive topic and it's, like, so hard to talk about because you're just afraid that you won't do it any justice.
I think that's why a lot of white people as well don't know what to do because they feel responsible. I mean, I have people in my life that they don't agree with the movement because they think, well, it's not our fault. Like, we, that was our ancestors. We didn't do anything. But you're reaping the benefits of what your ancestors did. So you can't sit there and say it's not your problem too. If you believe that, if you believe in equality, that's not equality for every white person. That's equality for every person.
You know what this sounds like to me? White privilege.
Yeah, it is. It 100% is.
It's the thing is, white privilege is literally, if something doesn't affect you, that means that you're actually privileged.
Yeah. Well, back to the media, I can say with almost 100% certainty that when I flick on the TV screen, I'm going to see myself represented on there. It might be like a hypersexualized and objectified version of a woman, but at least the woman on the screen is, you know, at least kind and nice and caring. So when people see me, they assume then I'm the same thing. It's not the case for Muslim men and women.
Yeah, for sure. Me growing up, not once have I seen myself represented in any way. Maybe that's not just because I'm like a multifaceted person or like I'm, there's so many different levels to me, but just there's never, you know why? You know why there's no representation of Muslim people, or if there was, why it's so wrong? It's because they're not letting Muslim writers do it.
Well, that's,
they're not like they're not letting Muslim people into the creative industry to just do their thing.
Yeah.
And the other thing is why we don't have that many Muslim people or like Muslim Arab people in the industry or creative industry is because they don't have that support that they feel like they're gonna make it. You know, because everyone's constantly letting them down. So if you know that if you see an Arab creator or like an Arab Muslim creator, that they've probably fought really hard.
Yeah. Yeah. So I guess this kind of relates. One of my sources, when I was talking to her about gender, she made a really good point. She said, you can't just add women and stir. You can't just add them and stir them in. And it's the same with minorities as well. You can't just add Muslim women to the industry and stir and be like, oh, we've done our bit now. It has to be active in positions of power. Do you agree with that?
100%. I feel like, how many times have you seen like in films, the main characters are white and then you have like a black character on the side?
Yeah, supporting roles.
Exactly. It's just because, all right, let's throw in a little bit of diversity here. But it's never like let's make a whole film and movie about this entire minority group. Like, one of my favorite films is Moonlight. Like, it's insane. I love that film so much. Like, the representation plus the story and like the film, the cinematography is just amazing. But it's also just refreshing. Even if I don't get to see myself on films and in shows, I'm still happy seeing like people of color on TV, because for me, I've won at life if I saw that.
Yeah.
Because that means that I have brothers and sisters out there that do feel like so shitty how it feels to be a minority, but they can still see themselves. And the problem is, it's not always a good representation, that's for sure, but like, I don't know, dude. As long as, for example, there's a show, Rami, I don't know if you've watched it. It's a TV show on Stan. It's done by Hulu. It's about a Muslim guy. And it's like literally the best so far representation I've seen. Because this Muslim guy is like, he practices his religion. He's just a normal human being going on his daily life, right? But even the writer himself, his name is Rami as well. It's literally, the story's about him. He says, I'm not here to represent an entire community. I'm just here to show you that there are people that are just human and happen to be Muslim doing their daily activities. Like it's just fucking life.
I think that also comes down, like, in the media, you also see this, you see this a lot where they just say, a Middle Eastern man. What do you mean by Middle Eastern? There are over 20 countries in the Middle East. Like, lots of media homogenize all of those different groups, but every single one of those groups has different identities, different cultures, different ways they practice, different ways. There's so many different facets that make up each of those identities. Like, how can we possibly homogenize huge sets of people into one group? It just seems ridiculous.
There's this like misconception that all Arab people are Muslim.
Yeah,
which is
not
ridiculous.
Yeah.
Because it's like, do you know that, like, it's probably like, I don't know the exact percentage, but it's like probably like 17% of Muslims are Arabs. That's 17%. Like, dude, There's Christians in Middle East. There's Jewish people in Middle East. Like, it's not just Muslim people, which is why it's like, I've seen a couple Arabs, like a couple Christian Arabs on TikTok, and people were like, "You're not Arab then." They're like, "Why?" "Because you're Christian." I'm like, "So how does that correlate?" Because the thing is, separate culture and religion. They are two different things. Islam is not Arab culture. And that's the thing. Like, the thing is, when you see that misrepresentation of Muslim people, it's because of the culture, dude. It's because they mix the two. It's just, it needs research. Like, people just need to educate themselves. And I keep saying that because it's like, if you want the world to be a better place and just a peaceful place for everyone to live in harmony, you guys need to do the work, because we're doing the work, you know? We're trying to educate you, but it shouldn't be our jobs anymore, you know? Because we're just trying to live normal, happy lives without being lectured or put into a box. So just do your thing, and you know, we all have access to internet these days, but also check your facts, because that can be misleading.
Well, that's what I mean by it. Like, it's not enough to just pass the mic over. You have to go away and then educate yourself and sit in those spaces and actively derail racist and bigotry rhetoric. Like, it's yes
for sure. You know what else I suggest is, like, actually talking to people of color, like having that conversation and just hearing their side of the story. Because again, like we mentioned, the media doesn't really do a great job at that, because it's always like, it's either you're representing us as thugs or like underprivileged or, you know, violent and all that stuff. So I really just suggest that if you have people of, like, your friends are people of color, just have those conversations with them. We won't attack you. We will just have, like, we will try and educate you and make you understand where we're coming from. Because I, like, just talking to you right now, I feel good, because it's like, I get to have this conversation with someone who isn't, you know, Muslim or Arab. And that's always important. And that's always been something that I wanted to preach, because, like, even just wearing the hijab for me is like, okay, I want people to know, and it opens people's eyes at the same time, you know? But yeah, like, it's just an interesting thing to think about, because even for me, like, yeah, I have white friends, but I do have a lot of people of color as well as my friends. And we all just, like, we're all from different backgrounds and different religions, but we relate on the same things because we understand the struggle.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, definitely. I guess just to wrap this up, I want to ask you, where do you see yourself in the future? What do you want to be doing?
Lately, like, the mental state that I'm in right now, I doesn't allow me to look that far.
Not which past is, uni.
Yeah, like, I know that I want to be a successful musician. I see myself traveling. I see myself meeting a lot of different people from different backgrounds and getting to know them. I see myself working with big artists. And I see myself changing some sort of thing about the Muslim community and the Arab community. There's just a bunch of stuff that I see for myself, and I truly believe that I can reach if I just go at the pace that I'm going at. But, you know, my motto is, like, just work hard no matter what. Because if something is worth it, if you really believe in something, it will happen for you, you know? Yeah. Some people might just say, oh, I want to be famous in 5 years. But, like, that's not really what I'm looking for. I just want to make a difference in people's lives and make a difference in mine. Make sure I'm a happy gal by 5 years. I've found peace. Not in terms of death, by the way. I mean, like, found peace in life. Yeah. Guys, if you want to take one thing away from this, is that, like, literally don't like give a shit about what people say about you. If you really believe in something and if you really, like, set a goal and, like, try to reach it, nothing can come in your way. Bro, you're going to have haters everywhere, but, like, just focus on the positive stuff. And some days it's going to feel like you don't want to get out of bed, but, you know, just, it's okay. Like, it's gonna be okay. Like, there's hope for the future, and I know it. I just know it, man.
Yeah. Great. Thank you, Serene.
Thank you, Kelsey.
See you next time, maybe.
See you next time.